I think we're good if we want to run it, if you want to start.
Okay.
Being silly.
Yeah, but you're good?
You're just going to keep making me scratcher, but I can do both.
I think we are. Get you a winemaker who can do both. A wine podcaster who can do both. Are you guys going to mention how cool it is that I'm wearing sunglasses to do this episode?
And they match your shorts?
Yeah.
Are you going for like a Robert Downey Jr. and Iron Man kind of thing?
Oh, yes.
That's it is very Robert Downey Jr. Because you got
the stash, the soul patch.
I was actually really self-conscious as soon as I got here. I was like, fuck, people in New York are stylish. I'm wearing like jeans. I look like a ding dong. Hot outside.
I'm wearing like Patagonia shorts I bought 5 years ago. The selling point is they have a 4-inch inseam.
Yeah, I'm a little worried I'm going to see some nut, I'll be honest.
Okay.
It's like a little bit right in my face.
That was my personality for a while, was like short shorts, uh-huh. Especially like when it was like in Australia, that's what you do. But yeah. I would shop for shorts and it was like 5-inch inseam, too much.
Yeah.
Well, I might have to hem those.
That feels very
what
like,
do they call shorts in Australia? I feel like they have like a good name for them. Like,
half like pants,
blendles,
shoddies. I have no idea. I think they call them shorts.
You have a very good. Now that I know you're from the South, like you, I feel like you have a very cool Southern vibe. It's more Southern than California. I feel like, and maybe filtered through Cali, but
this is really interesting.
I'm just like a mutt. South. I grew up in Mexico too,
cool.
And then Australia, Europe, California.
Yeah, the global south.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Europe, the global south. Yeah. Yeah. I have to be honest. So I'm teaching myself about Portugal for next season. And
they did a lot of bad stuff.
Yeah, Portugal's not like
oh, really?
The chillest, most fun country. It's like, yeah. Oh, cool.
They sort of started off a lot of that. Like, it's weird when you're like, oh, like Portugal and the Netherlands were such big players in colonialism. Mm-hmm. You're like, don't think about them that much anymore.
It doesn't pay to be first, you know?
Yeah,
it's
right.
It's like Friendster.
Yeah.
I think about this a lot. And I mean, you got into some interesting stuff.
Sure did.
On the Austrian
sounds season. Like me.
And like, I think maybe even like reined yourself in a bit. Mm-hmm. But what are the good countries?
Great.
Iran.
I think everyone's bad.
People like, always like when we list stuff. Mm-hmm. We did the best religions one time. Mm-hmm. We may have cut that.
I think we said Shia Islam also.
Yeah, right. What are the good countries? Yeah, maybe the... well, for one, borders are inherently mm-hmm. bad. So you can't have countries without borders.
But I mean, is there anywhere, like if you did a season that you dug into it, that you wouldn't be surprised by some evil doings? Like, huh. I just feel like it's human nature to be bad and to expand and like steal stuff. Not me, but everyone else.
Costa Rica's, they don't make wine, but Costa Rica is like pretty chill.
Yeah, if we did like, a rum season, I bet we'd be like,
the Caribbean,
as long as we did the right producers. But these
Caribbean's
guys are
like
good.
Very mm-hmm. sexist, homophobic, okay, machismo. Okay. Like, mm-hmm. I lived there for a while. I think everyone's got their kind of...
Yeah, Canada's bad.
Canada's a terrible place.
Yeah. Eek. Antarctica really hasn't done much.
I want to say Tunisia.
Uh-huh.
But that is like a symptom of them not really doing too much.
Yeah, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, but like, I mean, the Tunisian government's not like sick.
Yeah.
But like, if you're grading on a curve,
yeah,
they can only make Tunisians miserable.
Right.
Versus like a lot of other
which
places.
That is a big, yeah. A big deal.
Well, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sick, yeah.
Yeah. They make good wine, maybe.
Mm-hmm. I was about to ask.
Yeah.
Is that a Cabernet Sauvignon Blanc sure. kind mm-hmm. of yeah. empire?
For sure.
I'm really glad when you announced this season,
uh-huh.
I was very excited. I listen to every episode.
Yeah.
But
that is so weird.
You're also the only person who said you were excited about it.
Everyone else is like, fuck you guys.
Okay. I make a lot of Sauvignon Blanc. I think mm-hmm. Sauvignon Blanc's awesome.
Yeah.
And it's weirdly kind of like the white grape of California.
Yeah, yeah.
We have all these like epic old vineyards and it can be direct press. It can be orange. It can be sparkling. It does well in cold climates and in hot climates. It's just like very versatile. Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe even showcases terroir.
What is isn't terroir sulfur? Isn't that what you said?
Yeah. People are like, I heard you on that podcast. You said minerality was sulfur. I was like, that was one of my best.
Yeah, that was
my
a good
best
line.
Wines ever.
Minerality is sulfite too.
I can't wait for that to be the next t-shirt for wine from here.
It is actually weird that like Sauvignon Blanc is like, because like you would think like, oh, Chardonnay is the white grape of California, but it's like it's too important for it to be a grape for all the people in a way.
Well,
like,
I mean, to quote Hamilton, Chardonnay, if you stand for nothing, then what will you fall for?
Wow.
Yeah. You know? You guys, have you seen Hamilton while you're here?
No.
It's really good. It's about New York City.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I saw it with my dad, and he was really surprised by how well they were enunciating.
That we were city biking around doing sales the other day. I felt like such a badass.
Yeah.
And
on a city bike?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's yes. Yeah,
well, no, badass. Like we're like... Okay, Joe and I were both like ex-hipster fixie kids, so we were riding really aggressively.
Riding dirty.
Hell yeah.
And, but at one point, he like looked around, like he had to tell me something important, so I like, got closer, and he was like, something, something, that's where Hamilton is. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. Yeah. Hamilton's an important thing
well,
to know
about New
York.
Well, I mean, if you see a real New Yorker, they're going to tell you about best bacon, egg, and cheese, mm-hmm. best time they've seen Hamilton, mm-hmm. and their favorite time to go to the Statue of Liberty.
When people were telling me the like touristy things to do, no one said Statue of Liberty.
It's not touristy. It's cool.
Yeah,
that's exactly.
Yeah, I've we're never, not throwing away our shop.
Never once been. Of all the stupid things you could do... Going to the Statue of Liberty takes so... You have to get on a fucking boat. Like, what? Who has time?
I think the most touristy thing I've ever done is go to the Ten Bells, to be completely honest.
Wait, have you ever been to Alcatraz?
No.
Yeah, because you're not going to get on a fucking boat. Like, why would you get on a boat at home?
If some of my friends were visiting and were wanting to go, I would probably go because it seems cool. But I sometimes take the ferry to my winery. Mm-hmm. Like, I can take the bus to the ferry building... Ferry to the winery, and I'm usually the only person on the boat, so it feels kind of luxurious.
That's pretty cool.
Like I'm a boat guy.
Yeah, most California winemakers have their own boat.
I wish. I need boat friends.
I feel like maybe that's why the economics of making wine in California don't work is because you guys are all spending so much time on your fucking boats, not enough in the vineyard. Mm-hmm.
Boats and hoes. Certainly it.
Yep.
Certainly it.
Is this going to be a high energy or low? Well, you just finished a glass of wine, so I guess. Okay. Let's fucking go.
Is gorgeous.
I left my water over there, so I drank it all.
Yeah.
Well,
I had a long weekend.
I'll talk about this wine, and then... But first, like, I think Chardonnay can't be the grape of anywhere because it's everywhere.
Right, yes. And sure.
It's like Hamilton. Yeah, if you stand for nothing, what will you fall for? Exactly. That's what I said.
Exactly.
I meant it.
But I think... What... And I've listened to people talking about this on this season. So many people were like, oh, like James said that he didn't like Sauvignon Blanc. He thought Pinot Gris was better.
And we disavow like, James.
What the hell? But like to say you don't like any grape.
Yeah.
Is kind of cringe. Like to say you don't like Sauvignon Blanc is like being one of those people like, oh, I don't know Chardonnay.
It's like saying I like all music except for country and rap.
My Instagram handle at one point when I first got into wine, like 12 years ago, was no cops, no Chardonnay. And I think about that, like how I should have been executed.
Yeah.
And that I'm
here. You still could be.
I would know why.
Yeah.
Hey, also, welcome to Disgorgeous. It's a podcast about wine. I'm John McCarroll.
Hi, I'm Kevin Diamond. Our guest today is Brent Mayo.
Why are you talking like that?
I don't know. My hand was just here.
Yeah.
You think it sounds cool?
Kevin looks like he's like doing a stage whisper. Like he's about to whisper something to Alexander Hamilton.
I have no idea why I did that. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm just getting comfortable. I forgot we were doing a podcast.
You can, if you want, if you don't want to pay the fees to go see Hamilton live, it's on Spotify.
Or John could just sing it for you.
I could just rap it for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
What
it's
if
not singing.
Right, sorry.
What if a bastard, fucked up, stupid winemaker.
You only get one shot.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I've been trying to think about how to make wine cool and natural wine cool, and like what's the natural wine version of like
Natty Rhymes.
The Somme documentary, and maybe it's a musical.
That would be so cool.
That's a good idea.
Have you heard Natty Rhyme?
No.
I promised myself I wouldn't talk about them because I think it's sent from God to like break my brain. It's these dudes who just go to vineyards. They're like, oh, we're with the Kopitch family, and they just like bust out a freestyle.
I think someone sent me
wine.
That and I had to stop watching.
It's so fun. And every Austrian winemaker...
Not because it was bad. I don't want to disrespect their work if they're listeners, but it was too much for me. I think I was in a hungover state when I started watching it. I was like, I can't.
It feels like very powerful, either good or bad energy that I don't know that I can ever really take in.
It's not for us. It's sure, for yeah. Austrian winemakers. And they listen to it and they're like, yeah, this is pretty cool. They cook, yeah.
Yeah.
And they, but I mean, again, we have real hip hop. We've got Alexander Hamilton here. I'm sorry. Like, you know, you rapping about Trollinger is not going to impress me.
Ugh, that don't impress me much.
Sauvignon Blanc is a musical great to me. Like,
go on.
The more you eat, the more you toot.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. It's got up and down. Jesus. Like, it's got acid. It's fruity. Uh-huh. It's tropical. It's kind of wavy to me.
Yeah.
I get like sound wave sort of character. This is honestly, this could be kind of a Sound of Music.
Okay.
Type.
Okay.
I think it's from the Sierra foothills.
Mm-hmm. Uh huh.
I think.
And you're not referring to this winemaker as a Nazi.
No. Not
okay.
At
cool.
All.
But when people say Sound of Music, I'm always just like, round them up.
I've heard. Fuck. See, everything's problematic.
I know. Everyone's been bad. You can't. Yeah.
Honestly, wine sucks. I'm leaving.
And then you're probably like another cool New York City musical, West Side Story. What if they rapped? Don't worry. In the Heights.
I love West Side Story. I grew up.
Have you seen the new one?
My roommate really liked it. I think I watched it with him once.
This is going to sound like so annoying. Get really high and watch it. Steven Spielberg actually always wanted to do a musical, and he really likes dance. And it's not as good. It's not the same West Side Story you grew up with. This one's a little woker, which again, I hate because this is a right-wing wine podcast, politics podcast. Polycast.
The hello. Polycast, yeah. That was this month's episode.
We're all getting married. But it's good. That's my recommendation, is musicals about New York.
You weren't the one that watched the first 30 minutes of the original thinking it was the new one. Was that you? Was that a different friend of mine?
That was definitely not me.
Another person was like, yeah. I was like, man, Spielberg, like, shot for shot remake. It sounds just like... And then,
it's
like,
so cool.
And I was like, oh, this is the original.
Okay. That's something I would do if I was high. Like, okay, John told me I should watch this, get confused, like, navigating Netflix or whatever.
I really wanted to watch a Planet of the Apes movie last night.
How many are there?
A lot. But I wanted to watch the James Franco one, mm-hmm. and I accidentally put on the Tim Burton Mark Wahlberg one at first. But it took me, like, I was like, I forgot Mark Wahlberg was in this. And then I was like, oh no, this is the bad one that came up before the kind of good ones.
I watched The Sting the other day.
That's a good movie.
Well, yeah, but I was so high. I thought it was the Sean Connery movie where he
The Rock?
Gets Al Capone.
Oh. He's Al Capone?
No,
he goes to Alcatraz.
No, he catches Al Capone in this movie. It's another dad movie.
Yeah.
I thought that was so I spent the entire time, which is like cute little like buddy comedy. Like, where the fuck is Al Capone? Where's Sean Connery? And it is like a movie full of double crosses mm-hmm. and like backstabbing. So mm-hmm. I was like, I guess it's just coming in a little bit. So that's John's movie corner.
Great.
I love that segment.
Yeah.
Bring that one back.
Yeah.
Actually, fuck. I wanted to request a shot in the dark.
We can do shots.
I think shot in the dark was a great segment.
Yeah, we were hurting ourselves. That was our dark era.
Leaving your house after that was just like rolling the, like, what's, people would ask me on the subway, like, are you okay? Like, yeah, I'm good.
Like, I just got blackout drunk and then screamed cats for 20 minutes and now I'm on the subway. Yeah.
Everything's wavy, brother.
Yeah.
What do we think about this wavy wine?
It's great. I love it.
This is my buddy Carlos. He was part of the Fellowship of mm-hmm. Friends that mm-hmm. like that planted the Renaissance Vineyard. And this is from kind of Nevada City in the Sierra foothills, 2,700 feet elevation, probably like 50-year-old vines.
What vintage is it?
21, I believe, 2 years in barrel.
It's fucking lovely. It's something I think that a lot of times, like, cool Sauvignon Blanc kind of disavows Sauvignon Blanc. And this one hits, like, the nice, heavy, fun fruits on it rather than just being, like... I think a lot of people want restraint from Sauvignon Blanc. And that is kind of annoying because it doesn't seem to lend itself to restraint.
Yeah, well, it's... I think some people just want all wines to taste like Chardonnay. Mm-hmm. And
couldn't it be me.
I fucking love Chardonnay. Like, I'm making a good bit now too, but I embrace kind of what it is. But one of the things I kind of wanted to talk today with the wines I brought was, like, what is the difference between something being fine, like a fine wine, as in an okay, not like a fine wine. And, like, what's the difference between a totally mid wine and, like, what makes it great?
Yeah.
And for me with Carlos, he's, and spoilers, is kind of just going to be like insanity. He is like a weekend warrior. Mm-hmm. He makes all his wines in this, like, essentially like Harry Potter sort of like closet. He doesn't make much wine at all. Uh-huh. He multiple passes through the vineyard, picking like by hand, often by himself, perfect berries.
Yeah.
And then just leaves it in a barrel until it tastes really, really good. It's like not
right
working very much outside of the typical like California framework where you're like calling the pick and then yeah. the huge crew shows up and you pick like 4 tons in 30 minutes.
Well, that feels very much to be the difference between, and this is all generalization, obviously, but like a more European winemaking style and a California winemaking style. And it's obviously like driven by economics and history and everything else. Mm. But like,
run that back, DJ.
How many stories like from Europe do you hear where it's like, oh yeah, well, like they do like multiple passes in the vineyard and they have their own team picking and it's like blah, blah. And like when you come across a cool young winemaker in California, it's like, I got the grapes I could get and I got them when I could get them. Mm-hmm. And like I share 1/5 of a space with 7 other dudes and like that barrel got taken. Mm-hmm. Ladies as dudes too, mm-hmm. obviously. Ladies I didn't just mean guys. Too. And so like you're like, and then like, so to make great wine through all of those filters is almost like a more Herculean task in a sense. Not that there isn't difficulties to that sort of more quote unquote, like classic, like, oh, just like an old man in his vines, like not care in the world. Like that's still hard work, obviously, but there's like also privilege, the privilege of like,
for sure.
maybe you're the fourth generation who's inherited that property and you have learned since you were 3 and like you have, you know, maybe you have support from your government and all this other stuff that allows you to live a lifestyle that's pretty good and to do this very like hands-on task.
Or maybe an acre of land is exactly half the price of an acre of land in California.
Absolutely. Way
It's way less than half.
Yeah. It's way less. it's half if you include Champagne and Burgundy.
Well, no, I was going to say like they're both like very diverse places, but like you can certainly, there's certainly acreage in Burgundy that's cost the same as acreage in California.
Sure. Yeah.
What's interesting about this fucking wine, and this is does my favorite thing that Sauvignon, like that good Sauvignon Blanc does, which is shut up, dummy, have fun. Like the thing that really has been stressing me about this season is my favorite Sauvignon Blancs are the ones that are just like, your mom could like, and like not my mom. My mom actually doesn't like white wine, but like one's hypothetical mom.
Yeah,
and like Sauvignon Blanc is the only one I think that hits the high low dichotomy as well. Like a Pinot Noir that I would like is not a Pinot Noir that a hypothetical mom would like.
Right,
a Chardonnay that I would like is definitely not one. But Sauvignon Blanc can play the entire fucking field.
Yeah,
like this wine, I'm sweating just because I'm here with two hot dudes.
I want to take my shirt off.
You can take your shirt off.
It's really allowed in New York. You could be on the street, pop your shirt off, no problem. Okay. Just know that while you're here.
And like, this is so fucking refreshing. And like, I know there are like smart people things to say about it, but I'm just like, duh, let's go.
Yeah.
I didn't ask Carlos if there was maceration because I don't think so, but
there's a textural element.
There's texture. Like, I think that's just like fruit intensity, concentration, press fire, maybe. Like,
I was thinking also like, just the 2 years in the barrel has developed a lot of just textural, maybe leesiness or something. I'm not sure, but yeah.
Lees
is sulfur, right?
I wish I was smart and funny things to say really quickly. But there's a touch of reduction. I feel like, honestly, we can come back to this maybe later. But my kind of rule of thumb now is like, I'm trying to just do more and more time in barrel on everything and more time in bottle, but
which again is a luxury for a lot of
exactly. Yeah. But it's like, I'm at the point like this year, I'm just like, every wine needs to be in barrel for 18 months, except I also need to bottle wine and sell some.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just like, which ones
that's
really,
what you're
really need
for.
It?
Who and gets
which
to ones, die? Yeah.
Whoa, stinky.
But no, it's however long a wine is in barrel, that's how long it kind of needs in bottle before it kind of bounces back to 100%. It can just be really like quiet before that. All right. So this, honestly, like, I've got a few more bottles of Carlos's Sauvignon Blanc, and I'd probably save them for another year or two. And now, I mean, I'm so excited to drink this with you all. This is a Pierre Bourget's 2016-2020 Sauvignon Blanc.
It smells like a grapefruit mimosa. So horny.
2016-2020?
It's one barrel of 2016, one barrel of 2020.
Right.
Bottled in the summer of 2022. So the 16 was 6 years élevage, and the 20 was 2 years élevage.
Oh.
Also, this is maybe the worst wine I've ever had from him, just for context.
Really?
And this is delicious.
He's the best winemaker in the world.
Damn.
I mean, like, yeah.
Present company excluded, obviously.
No, I mean, I aspire to what he does, and he definitely is a big motivation, but he's in the Auvergne. Mm-hmm.
He's like the guy in the Auvergne.
There's a couple guys, you know, there's doing very different things. There's like Tricot, mm-hmm. which is like very dialed, very consistent, very precise. And then there's like Patrick Bourgeau making a lot of wine, a little bit more wild. He's doing a lot of negos as well. I worked with a couple that separated now, and like Catherine, I don't think gets imported. Catherine DeMauro, like, I don't think she gets imported to New York, but she's with Percy Selection in California.
Mm-hmm. Friend she's of the amazing. Pod. Please respond to my DMs.
But Pierre learned to make, he says that his biggest winemaking influence was the harvest he worked in California at Matanzas Creek.
Oh, funny.
But he like planted like maybe, I think it's like 2 acres of vines, Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Gris, and Syrah, and Pinot. And everything he does is insane and unconventional.
Yeah.
He like will maybe spray once or twice, but any berry that gets rot, he just drops. So like there's not a lot of vineyard work. He's just walking through dropping clusters. So his yields are very low. He waits incredibly late. Things are like desiccating on the vine.
This tastes like hang time. Absolutely. Yeah. That's so fucking
sick. He picks
sick.
Like after the canopy's gone. I think he does passerillage. So like I think he's actually like picking and air drying.
Oh, whoa.
Interesting. For a while.
For everything?
He's also very mysterious. He's like,
I mean, the label itself is very much like there's nothing on it.
The vintage before there was no label.
Yeah, cool.
That's so great. Right.
Perfect.
But before he was with his girlfriend and she was making the labels, but they separated, and so now there's no labels.
Mm-hmm. There is no concept of le branding in France. That is fucking sick.
So this is the most like VA cuvée of his that I've had. And I know he's like very self-conscious about this wine. I think he's a little... He hates VA.
Got it.
But...
Well, I have bad news for him.
Yeah.
All of his wines have such a signature. There's this like...
Thank you.
What I call it canned sweet corn or creamed corn. Uh-huh. They all have this like vegetal component to it, and there's just like density.
Yeah.
He didn't make wine last year because he was in and out of the hospital and just like he like really struggling with like mental health.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear
that. And I was actually originally planning to go work with him after this trip, except I did too much alcoholism with you New Yorkers, and I have to go home and lay in bed.
We just call that a normal Thursday night.
Yeah. We have substance abuse problems because if you weren't numbing your brain, you'd actually see the human misery surrounding you. And
piles of garbage, yeah.
So you just have to like...
become one with the garbage.
It gives you psychic protection, being drunk.
But see, no, I think I was going to bring this up earlier. When everywhere is bad, I think that's why we did wine. Mm-hmm. It is that psychic protection. We're just like, I don't want to pay attention to all that shit. Like,
I also think that's why we did New York City. Like, I think that's why New York City exists. Like, I think those of us who live here and like love living here, and I say that as someone who has technically left, it's like, well, like at least this place like has its like shittiness on its sleeve. Like we've never had a good mayor. We just put our garbage on the fucking sidewalk and no, hope that someone picks it up.
We had de Blasio, who was very cool.
It's like, no matter what, like, we are the lunatics running the asylum, and that's what we like about it.
Tall poly guy, yeah. Who kept on, like,
his getting... Poly?
His wife was cheating on him.
Oh, wait, I remember. Yeah. I remember that. Not cheating.
Yeah, they were. His wife was sleeping with other people.
There's
the
nothing
whole time.
Wrong with that.
You know, no. It was cool. He was like out here, like bawling, and yeah. Just like everyone hated him. And he was like,
"Who's from Boston?"
He's like, yeah. "NYPD, please don't threaten to kill my daughter." And they're like, "Sorry, we're gonna fucking kill your daughter."
Remember when they turned their back on him?
Yes.
They're like, "Now's the time to take your shot. If you were gonna take a shot, it's so fucking crazy."
Yeah, I know so little about New York.
He was so swagged out. He was so fucking cool. We had a bad bitch.
He looked like Big Bird.
Who was good?
Nobody. I was talking about this a couple days ago.
He was cool.
Who?
Has there been a good anyone?
Giuliani. Cleaned up Times Square.
Yeah. With Koch? People liked Koch? I can't remember.
I'm going to say no.
Mayor Dinkins? I mean, like, they rapped about him on A Tribe Called Quest, but I don't actually know what he accomplished in his one term.
Well, it's because Dinkins rhymes with Thinkins. And so, like, you got to rhyme right there.
Yeah, I think it's all been bad, basically, just like the rest of the world. But we're not putting on airs about it.
So, so we developed alcohol to protect us.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you all my, like, really high mushroomy.
Let's
honestly,
go.
I'm surprised we didn't talk about this the other day. But
we did mushrooms.
Actually, we're going to have to talk about this a lot because I think it will like play into your next season.
Okay.
But I think I actually have this like high thought that. So one theory is that like the agricultural revolution and the development of agriculture
was a mistake.
Well, it was definitely that's well agreed upon. But
that's peasant mentality. I'm a lord, dude.
It was people's affinity for alcohol. Mm-hmm. We liked alcohol so much that we wanted to figure out how to streamline it and grow lots of grains to ferment.
Yeah.
And that required the staying still, staying in one place for a while. My theory is that actually humans are domesticated by fungi.
Mm-hmm.
And like yeast and mushrooms domesticated us and got us addicted to alcohol.
So that we would create places for them to live and thrive and murder themselves.
And it's like the planet use yeast and alcohol to control our species.
That I would
keep us
buy.
From like getting to.
Yeah.
It's almost like a control on the species.
I do think people should drink more. Like I think when people get ambitious, it's like that's a sign from God that you should be drinking.
Honestly, and if you want to drink more, you can order a case of Stagiaire wine.
Yeah. Let's fucking go. What's the website again?
StagiaireWine.com.
Wow.
/store.
That's
actually, it's too
forward
hot.
Or backward slash, do you know?
Y'all are the slash experts.
Okay, I'll check. I'll do some research. I'll get
back
to you.
Yeah, they call me a slasher. It took us like 6 years to figure out what the fucking...
I actually, even now, I'm like, maybe we got it wrong all along.
No, it's forward slash.
Yeah,
forward.
Cool.
This is how you can tell this is a modern Discordious. And by the way, just because we're doing plugs.
Do you want more of this?
Yeah. The Patreon is so fucking good right now. I don't want to brag, but it's really good. We've got a lot of good interviews coming up, and we don't get drunk on the Patreon, so a lot of times smart things get said. And that's patreon.com/discourgeous. And there's like a lot of tiers. Just do $5 a month. Don't worry about it. If you want to give
I thought you were talking about like you. That there's a lot of tears. Like
there's a lot of tears. I have cried on it.
Okay, cool.
When my mom was on, I think I cried.
The wines today are beautiful. Yeah. We're all crying.
Yeah. Right. This is so fucking good. Now we're done with plug. Do you have a plug, Kevin?
I don't have a plug. I have a couple of thoughts. So like I wanted to set the stage for this episode. We have not allowed anyone to bring more, like to have more than two wines on an episode. And you were like, first you wanted to do these two French wines. We said, great, we've done a lot of California.
Well, no, you were like, John wanted me to do French, but I was like, I'm kind of the like domestic wine guy.
Yeah.
Could you open the Nick Couturier first? Mm-hmm. I think the Boulet is going to be wild, so we should do that one last.
Okay. Cool.
But let's give this one a look.
So today, what we sort of decided was this season, as John has said, was almost like a backdoor to talking about California. We haven't strictly done California wine, but it's been a lot of the conversation. And what I liked about the idea of doing on this episode with a California winemaker, two French wines, two American wines, one each of Cab and Sauvignon Blanc, was having this sort of conversation about what the differences are in approach to these grapes, if there are any. And one thing I'm thinking about drinking this wine right now, which we have all admitted is a wild fucking wine.
It's really fucking tasty.
These are, I dream about these wines.
I have this feeling that if an American winemaker made this wine, people would say it was just flawed and that it was bad.
Oh, I mean,
because I don't think that they're given credit,
yeah,
or like permission to be weird on the edges of something as much as people in Europe are allowed to be, because we romanticize this idea of the European winemaker and be like, oh, he's crazy. His like hair is always messy and he's always like got like his underwear tucked into his shirt. I don't know how you would do that. And he makes like the most bonkers wines ever, but it's like he's talking to God. Like, no one would say that about an American winemaker.
Also, we would just get canceled.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
The French the French have done a lot of good services in keeping fucking monsters in circulation.
Sure. Among other things, it's one of their many crimes in Griswold.
I agree. There is... not that we're held... We are, like, to a... We're held to a higher standard in our behavior, but also... Like the winemaking, like people will celebrate a really volatile kind of like culty French producer's wine, but then like people are like, I don't know, man, it's a little too much VA.
Yeah, and I think that's like a shame. I want to be on the record that like I don't think that's fair, and I don't think it's cool.
But I actually think that is what's making. I'll just talk about California wine.
Sure, please.
But I'm very excited about all domestic wine.
Mm-hmm.
We are held to that standard, and we have so many challenges, as everyone knows. Y'all talk about it. Like, you kind of have to be on your shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pushing people to make really good wines. Because if you're not making good dialed wines, people just kind of stop.
If you let the Bay Area winemakers loose in France, it would be the best vintage of wine made in France of all. Like, I believe this 100%.
When friend of the pod, Pete, and I were in France, we were... for the salons, I was pouring.
We referred to him as Hot Pete on the
Hot pod. Pete.
Yeah.
Hot Pete. We were both like so many times talking to winemakers or tasting wines, and we'd like look at each other and we're like, this is really bad. And then they'd be talking about it, and the level of like viticultural knowledge, this is generalization, and people are going to like yell at me about this.
No, this is a podcast.
And yell at Brent, not yet at, yell at me. I'm not saying.
I'd say like, I'll just talk about me and us again. I'd say like, the level of viticultural knowledge amongst the people farming and the growers of like my generation and the winemaking knowledge on average compared to the maybe European average is on another level.
100%.
I think it has to be. I think if you do one or two vintages and you aren't at that level, you get washed out immediately.
Yeah, yeah. But also, I will say like the most exciting stuff has... Hard to say the most exciting. This is the most exciting wine from Europe for me. But at Brumaire Wine Fair in Oakland this past March, though Europeans that I really resonated with and was very impressed by were the young generation. It was like Martin and Alana from Marto Wines and this guy Lucas that is in Switzerland.
Oh, fun.
And I think he's imported by Soil Expedition, but... They have that similar drive, you know. I mean, Martin, I think, inherited some stuff, but Lucas is kind of like bootstrapping it. And it's just like, you got to be good. Or
who's going to bring in a Swiss wine anyway if it's not great?
Exactly.
Like, right, Marto's brother, I've met at wine festivals, has a Verlich tattoo on his inner lip. One of the weirdest motherfuckers. He's so cool.
I didn't know he had a brother.
Yeah, he's just like this guy... he looks like Snape. He's so cool. I love him. If you're listening, keep on DMing me, man. I love you. And is an ex-Vero tattoo on his inner lip. And I'm like, you party, dude.
But so I think survival, financial, like business survival is tricky because do you want to run a successful business or do you want to make great wine? I think those may be at odds sometimes.
Sometimes.
I think that if I wanted to run a successful wine business, I would do a lot of things differently.
You would not come on this podcast.
This is going to fuck
you. This is really bad. I'm so sorry.
But you're like, you want wines accessible. You want wines out quickly. Filtering and sulfuring makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, like only five people in the United States care if your wines are sulfur free. Like, if you, you can sell in supermarkets, like mm-hmm. buy cheap fruit. Mm-hmm. If you want to make great wines, you're kind of, the markets kind of force you into this easily accessible, consumable standard product, a fine product.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's not very interesting to me.
Yeah.
I think to like make something actually great, it takes working outside of that capitalistic kind of framework.
Mm-hmm.
And that either takes like insanity, like pretty much every winemaker or every person.
Yeah, we were discussing
mental illness or just, you know, like generational wealth and like.
Or both.
Well, or both. And honestly, like the people that are like have like lots of money and access to capital, like that are doing great things, like fuck yeah. Like that's better than like
sure
being a lobbyist and
like, yeah, or building a spaceship for rich people to go to the moon.
I would rather have rich kid wine than rich kid Google. Like I think that makes sense.
I know what you mean.
Something I was thinking about when we were talking about like if this wine were made in the United States, it would taste it would be viewed as flawed. And I think the thing is that the AOC system as a whole allows winemakers very quickly to say what they are working against.
Uh-huh.
Whereas like, you know, the AVAs in California are really, there's a couple of them that have some traction, but lot of them.
What do you mean? Working against?
So like, if you are like,
if you're in Sancerre and your wine is fucking weird.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I
and
I
you're like not allowed to label a Sancerre anymore.
Yeah. Okay. Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez. Yeah. I'm not throwing away my shot. For stuff like that, like European winemakers have an enemy they can point at.
In a way, the rules are so much more delineated, or whatever, that like you then have a thing to work against. Yeah. Perhaps in the way that in California you don't as much.
And like you know, American winemakers can kind of like, well, I'm like playing against the idea of California as a whole, but like that is unsatisfying.
Mm.
So that people, again, the same wine made in different places. In California, like, this is flawed, or maybe this person's undisciplined.
Mm.
Whereas in Europe, it's kind of like the whole, like, it's like the Picasso bullshit. Like, you can be like, this drawing looks like a child did it, but I know that you are reacting to 2,000 years of classical art history. Versus when you look at outsider art, you're like, I wonder if this person knows why it's good, which is, it doesn't really fucking matter. And like,
you're right.
It's the same fucking picture.
It's a very condescending way of looking at it. Yeah. Right. Yeah, for sure. No, that's absolutely fair.
Yeah. I'm really smart, man. I'm all fucking cylinders. I slept 9 hours last night.
Honestly, can we pause it? I need to just like think for 5 minutes.
Do you need to?
Let's just sit here quietly.
That would be cool.
Let's all just hum for a little bit. People will like that.
They love musical breaks.
Yeah, play Hamilton.
And
now, ladies and gentlemen, Hamilton.
I feel like
we should get him on.
I want to get back to the outsider art thing and like also like who decides what's great.
Mm-hmm. So, I also don't think you guys are doing. I want to make it very clear. I don't think Californians are outsider art, but I think it gets
there are some people. I love outsider art and like people that come into things without the baggage of knowing what things are supposed to be like, and like a lack of awareness.
Have you seen Michael?
What?
The movie?
The movie about
John Travolta?
When John Travolta is an angel and he comes down to Earth.
I was like raised really religious and I didn't see a lot of like those
movies. This one's about an angel though.
Yeah. It's about an angel and he does battle all the time. He like crashes his head into a cow.
Are there like boobs in it?
No, I would remember that.
Okay. I definitely haven't seen
it. I get Michael confused with Phenomenon.
Phenomenon does have boobs in it,
which
right?
happened around the same time. Yeah.
I'll ask my mom if I can watch it.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Tell you heard about on podcast. I think Michael, as it just came to my head, is an example of an outsider artist who's really good. He's an angel. He doesn't know anything about human society, but he does good. Or like the Ninja Turtles are outsider artists too, I guess.
I think that's based on an old French film.
I think you might be right.
Yeah. Michel.
Michel. It might be, honestly, it might be called Michel. I can't remember.
I remember it's in a Beatles France, song.
It's a Franz Ferdinand song.
Basically, like, Catherine and Manu were, like, my adopted parents. Mm-hmm. And they had, like, two kids, Etienne and Jean. Mm-hmm. And I would, like, watch TV with them sometimes. And I remember Catherine put this, like, movie on for us, me, a full adult, two young children, to keep us distracted.
That's
like, while
so
she was
tight.
Making dinner one day.
That's so amazing.
And it was, like, people in this heaven zone, mm-hmm. like coming to Paris and like not knowing what cars were.
That might be it. Yeah, that there's some car stuff.
Okay.
That's not Wings of Desire. No, that's Wim Wenders.
I'm going to say something that's going to sound so unbelievably horny, and I'm going to need you guys to understand I don't mean it that way.
Is it about this wine?
I need a French mommy so bad. Oh. That would be so tight. But again, I don't mean that in a weird
way. It's really good. Honestly, mm-hmm. like having two moms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like two dads.
Yeah.
More.
Miss me with that dad shit.
Dads that actually love me and say, like, good job, Brent.
Right.
Oh, that sounds cool.
That's
cool.
I'm very, very grateful. Yeah. But I feel like when I started in California, going back to the kind of like the reactionary stuff, I did somewhat childish, like fun labels, and I was doing the co-ferments and the things that were
maybe
before its time and at least in California. But I feel like a lot of people in the natural wine scene now are almost leaning into California as something to set us apart from the rest of the world. And I think...
What do you mean by that?
Like
leaning into the classic California grapes? Or like...
Leaning into the grapes, leaning into the climate, like...
The
ripeness. Not picking things early to feel like Burgundy or something, or Jura, like, just like... Shit gets ripe.
It like, is California, like, yeah.
In other... With climate change now, like, it's rarer and rarer that people struggle to get ripeness, but we've never struggled to get ripeness.
Right.
And so that is kind of like a change of mindset. In France, you're like almost waiting, twiddling your thumbs for the grapes to get ripe.
Right.
And
California always feels like winemakers are like, fuck, I'll be really busy for the next three weeks because like, kind of I gotta go.
23 was awesome because that wasn't the case.
We got it.
We were able to just like lounge around, like wait for things to get right for the first time ever.
This is really, I mean, we've had this on the podcast before.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I suggested I bring this and I forgot we drank it on the last podcast, but it was kind of perfect because it like ties into like cults, literal cults, cults of personality, culty wine, and Cabernet.
This wine fucking bangs. It was good last time.
This bottle's...
I was not there.
No.
So this is... So for me, it's new, and I'm glad that you included me.
Kevin's mouth is the only canonical mouth of the podcast.
That's true.
I'm saying the horniest thing. I'm so sorry. I gotta go.
You've got a soul patch. You've got short shorts.
You got a canonical little mouth, buddy.
Hey. Y'all really gotta get the Disgorgeous TV show going. The fans need visuals.
We got to get a lot hotter and like 10 years younger. Like I got to get a vampire facial.
I could also
get when they put blood in your face, not when a vampire comes all over you. Edward Cullen DM me.
Seeing as vampires only drink blood, go with me. When they do come, one would think.
I don't want this conversation,
Kevin. The cum tastes like blood.
Yeah. Thank you.
Do you think it's bloody cum though?
I don't want this conversation.
No, if it's bloody. My parents do listen to this podcast. Okay. This is one of the worst things I've said.
I'm not cutting this. So.
My parents were a little here. I'm really sorry. Thanks for watching my children.
Yeah. Like, oh, Kevin's in the big city making money.
This is fucking delicious.
It's delicious.
So yeah, we're drinking Sonoma Mountain Winery 2009 Cabernet Sauvignon. Mm-hmm. This is... Nick Couturi, the son of Tony Couturi. This was his first vintage, I'm pretty certain. Mm-hmm. So Tony is kind of culty personality, polarizing person. Mm-hmm. He was the first winemaker in California really working without sulfur. Mm-hmm. And his brother, Phil, was one of the big proponents of organic agriculture. And Phil is still like very big in Sonoma. He has a company, Enterprise, that's one of the biggest organic vineyard management companies. And certainly like a huge part of why there's so much organic agriculture in Sonoma and around.
Yeah.
But Nick came up, man, I wonder how much to talk about Tony Couturi and Sonoma Mountain Winery.
I think we got in depth there last time.
Okay, but someone should do an article or
I think this could be a TV series because I think most people in wine know Couturi as a name in California. Mm-hmm. They know some of the history.
Well, it was just a bad place. Like, I was just hanging out with this guy. Not a bad place. It was a
walk it
fiery,
back.
Passionate, happening place. I was making biochar on the top of Mount Veeder at this guy Bill's vineyard. And he was friends with Phil, and he called Tony Anthony. Mm-hmm. But he was just talking about, it was so funny, he's like the most California surfer dude, but lives on this mountain. He was talking about, like, he was like, those guys, they had the bomb, mountains of it. We were just like ripping through cocaine at the winery. And I was like, okay.
It sounds kind of like Rowan Imports.
I don't think our stuff is very good.
But no, this was just this like, this winery on this mountain in Sonoma was this like inflection point where hippies were hanging out. The Grateful Dead were there. John Belushi was there. It was this.
It feels very like where was Sharon Tate murdered? Laurel Canyon kind of vibes or something, right?
The transition from like weed to cocaine in like California history is the best music and art of all time.
The Grateful Dead cocaine album is my favorite album of all time.
Really?
Oh my God, it's so good. Touch of Grey? Yeah. That song rips.
That's canonically just like it's known as.
Yep.
Okay. I don't know. I'm weird.
I'm pretty sure. Is it that the record? There's another record from around the same time that someone else made where they're like, don't remember most of it.
Yeah. All of David Bowie's Berlin trilogy.
Yeah, exactly. He's like,
I guess I made these songs. Yeah. Of the first 100 episodes of Discord.
Late 80s Fleetwood Mac, even the late like 80s Bob Dylan records, which might not have been cocaine, that might have been Christianity.
What's
I'm not quite sure, but yeah, Sim Effects, very good.
But so Tony was doing natural wine, picking very, very ripe.
Yeah.
His wine's off. I honestly need to taste newer stuff. I think his newer wines are a little bit more precise, but often the wines have like RS and VA, but they spent a while in barrel and like developed a unique character. This wine, there's a unique cellar microbiology, a cellar terroir that every wine made in that winery has. Tony's wines, Nick's wines, Ashanta kind of escaped, but my friends from Atella, young women in California, they made a vintage there, and their wines have it. It's this like hoisin sauce.
It's very like umami soy kind sauce. Of thing. Yeah.
There's also like, and I am almost certain I said this 50 episodes ago last year. There's like a mintiness to this wine that is like truly out of control. No,
so this vineyard, Dan Marioni now makes Cabernet from this vineyard. It's his Rademacher Cuvée. It's valley floor, always very eucalyptus. Mm-hmm. Mm. And it's interesting to see aged out, kind of.
Yeah. Fucking monstrously good wine.
Yeah, this is very tasty.
I wish people gave me more Cabernet like this.
Well, so this is Cabernet is Cabernet for a reason. It's fucking good.
Uh-huh. Like, tell us more. I need more of this energy now.
Like, there's a billion grape varieties. Uh-huh. Not a billion. Several thousand.
Yeah.
Tens of thousands, probably.
Yeah.
I'm about to sneeze. I'm so fucking sorry.
It's okay.
It happens. We'll edit. Life goes on. We will not.
Do, 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 do. Maybe not.
Pinch your finger. If you pinch your like the skin between your thumb and your pointed finger,
that makes you.
It stimulates your sneezes nerve.
I've never heard that.
It's like a thing that astrology girlies say.
Oh my God! This is like some fucking torture. What the fuck?
We got this. We're going to come back.
There's a lot of varieties that really don't bring a lot.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That was like Chekhov's sneeze.
Let's
I was like, it's
go.
Coming, baby. It's been announced. Mm-hmm. Could not wait.
And like the, it's kind of this vicious circle and like self-fulfilling prophecy where the good varieties get planted in other places.
Keep them coming
because they're good.
Yeah,
sneeze and then truth. More people plant them, and then it becomes just the global language.
Yeah.
Now these noble varieties, Sauvignon Blanc and Cabernet, are important. One, because they're like good varieties, but also because they're planted everywhere. So they are a good tool to communicate what's going on culturally, viticulturally,
yeah,
and like in winemaking terms in any country. It's like a shared language. Like for better or for worse, English is the global language. Mm-hmm. There's many other languages out there. Not one isn't better than the other, but English, Persian, you can communicate with more of the world than any other language. Sure. Cabernet, Sauvignon Blanc, Chardonnay, and Pinot, that's the wine language of the world.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like if you're at a wine fair with a lot of winemakers from all over the world, and you're trying to find a way to like connect with another winemaker next to you from somewhere else, you'd be like, oh, we both have a Cabernet. Yeah. Okay. Like, well, yeah. How did you find it in, mm-hmm. you know, exactly. Slovenia or whatever versus exactly. wherever I was in California?
I think something that's kind of interesting is that, like, the way that Cabernet spreads is, like, people are tasting absolute fucking bangers that have a shit ton of age and are put together and yeah. well-built.
And they're like, I want to do that. I'm going to plant a vineyard and wait 40 years.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah.
And then like,
and then wait 10 more years for it to be good. Yeah.
And it's like so much of it the people, the brand Cabernet is stronger than how to make Cabernet. So you get a lot of people who are like, I want to make a Cabernet, even though I don't want to do Cabernet things. And that's when you get like the glut of wines that are technically Cabernets that like, again, if most Cabernet Sauvignons that I was given did this, I would be like, fuck yeah, Cabernet Sauvignon.
Y'all should...
join a cult.
For sure, join a cult. But I drank a Magnum of the 18, which was the last vintage of Sonoma Mountain Winery, mm-hmm. / the first vintage that it became Dan Marioni.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For Thanksgiving, and it was bonkers.
Ooh.
And...
That smelled... Bad.
You still kind of get it.
That's good.
Oh boy. I haven't tried this. I love this guy's wines though.
I don't know this wines.
I don't think they make it into New York.
No.
Weird when that doesn't happen. Send your wines to Disgorgeous Studios.
This is the weird
this is definitely the feral wine.
Uh-huh. Okay. But here's the weird opposite of what the thing I said about California winemakers. I think California gets more of the weird European wine than New York does.
I would love to talk.
And yet they are not allowed to they are sort of, it's frowned upon if they start making wine like that.
Yes. Well, the thing is like we often like have to sell to the entire country. Mm-hmm. The California natural wine scene is honestly like mirrors like Percy selections. Producers like volatility, ripeness, wildness is kind of embraced.
Yeah.
This was my perception coming over here. I felt like maybe the New York natural wine scene was a little bit more classically leaning, mm-hmm. like Zevrovin inspired. And
boy,
like,
that is maybe that's a weird way to phrase the Zevrovin book.
I guess
it's pretty classical leaning book.
Well, the Zev book is big and maybe imprecise, but I don't know.
Like, well, maybe I think Dresner.
Dresnarian.
Okay.
Or even Jenny Francois a little bit. And for sure, producers
Jenny
in the Zev book,
I Jenny think. Jenny is a little bit more focused. I'd say that.
Right.
Like, Natty Light.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know even if it's Natty Light as much. Well, yeah. I don't know.
We like
or
Natty
it's
Light.
Like, it's well, like.
Percy Selections and California Natural Wine is like. No fucking sulfur.
Yeah.
What the fuck? It's like very dogmatic, like insistent. Whereas I feel like on the East Coast, it's more like, oh, like we just want the wine to taste good. Like at the end of the day, sure. We got a business to run.
Because I think most of the people who work in wine here, who work in wine here are like very, I think very afraid of like losing their job. And like, and part of that is like making sure the customers who are coming in are getting natural wine, but like, also, like, aren't, like, challenged at all. I think that happens at a lot of restaurants here. Not all restaurants. But that's more possible here that's true, I think.
This tastes like goblin meat tartare. This mm-hmm. is so
this
fucking
wine
good.
Whips. Honestly, like, really so this good. Is, like, honestly, like, more VA than I personally like. I'm, like, a weird guy in California where, like, I don't like that much VA. But you drink this and it's just, like, it's, like, I feel... I'm like riding on an airboat in a swamp in Louisiana.
Uh-huh.
Just like it's noisy, wind like rushing back. There's an alligator over there.
I thought that the French Sauvignon Blanc we had more VA than this does. Even
do you think so?
I thought so, but maybe my palate has just like adjusted.
Honestly, technically, it maybe does. It's just like that has so much density,
and
body, it almost takes it.
Yeah.
I want to go to a shooting range so bad. I drink this wine. I was like, I want to fucking shoot a gun.
Yeah. What the hell is that?
I want to do some bad things.
When I was dating on my Hinge profile, I was like, had a poll because you have to like do stuff to get people to interact with your profile so that you
couldn't
can get dates. But it was like, what's your ideal first date? And I was like, go to a shooting range. That's the only one to remember. That was the correct answer, though. Anyone that said shooting range, I was like,
cool.
That's cool, yeah.
Like, Easter egg, fun fact, I went to an NRA camp.
Okay.
Wow.
When I was little.
Very cool.
Very little.
Did you meet, what's the guy's name?
Charles
Cold
Heston?
Dead Hand? Yeah.
Who's that?
Charlton Heston.
He's God.
He's from Planet of the Apes, as I mentioned earlier.
I actually met him through Mardi Gras stuff. He's like friends with my family who was there for Mardi Gras.
Wow.
Yeah.
Incredible.
But I used to shoot guns a lot.
That's cool.
I like shot competitively, like shotguns. I shot like trap and skeet and then was starting to like fuck around with like long range rifle stuff.
Have you ever done like John Wick gun stuff? Like, you know, like 9mm, just like in the pocket, like bah!
Like killing like thousands of people.
Well, no, I mean, I'm assuming you're not going to, but like, maybe there's like a
training. You mean like gun tricks?
Yeah, gun tricks.
I have like very little, I've never owned a handgun and I've like very little experience with them. I've only shot some friends' guns at the range.
I would say that if you want Brent to get a handgun, it's stagiairwine.com/store.
Honestly, like San Francisco, people like kind of talk about New York as being like, people said like the crime's getting a little bad, and I was like, San Francisco is fucking unhinged. Not that anyone needs to be shot, but like sometimes I am like, I might need to get a gun.
You should get a katana.
Dirty Harry takes place in San Francisco, right?
Does it?
I think so.
I feel like I was about to say the same thing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's San Francisco.
But I feel like a lot of those. That one, but I played a Dirty Harry video game.
Well, those 70s like a bad cop cleaning up the streets movies. I feel like we're like San Francisco for some reason.
So my girlfriend always says like when I'm anxious, I say really problematic, unhinged things, and I'm trying to work on that. But the last one was that I was going out to dinner with some friends that I hadn't seen in a while, and like we're like waiting to be sat, and we're talking about just like there's like rules, there's like tricks and strategies for not getting mugged and not having your like windows smashed and not having your car stolen. And I was like, everyone's kind of angry about this. And we just need like a Batman.
One rich guy to beat up all the homeless people.
We shouldn't talk about this.
I'm
going to get in trouble. I am not that guy.
You were not the Batman? That sounds like something the Batman
when I was
would
say. In San Francisco last time, everybody had a lot of opinions about like, hey, oh, your bag? Take your bag out of the car. There's like all these rules for what can be in the car and what can't. And I was how do you all fucking live?
We've solved that in New York by not having cars.
Yeah.
I get it now. I get it.
And we have nunchucks.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, you can bring them, you can do tricks with them, but you can also pummel somebody.
I mean, y'all saw like my truck got stolen.
Yeah, that was crazy.
And that was actually the biggest, that was definitely like almost should have put me out of business. Like I didn't have it insured properly. Biggest mistake of my career.
Yeah.
And I had only had it for like 2 months, and it was basically like $20,000 down the drain.
Ugh.
But I got it back.
Yeah.
And I had to rip out the interior and deep clean it. And now I'm slowly piecing it back together. Yeah. It kind of runs very roughly, but it's going to be okay. But I had my truck stolen. I think I've had like 4 windows smashed in the last year with nothing in the car.
That sucks.
Every once in a while, like you leave. So sometimes some people, their strategy is to leave the cars unlocked, but then you still like come to your car and it's been ruffled through. Mm-hmm. Like they like open the glove box and just throw stuff around. And it's like very unsettling. I like parallel parked and was just like fucking around on my phone looking at Instagram before going to grab a coffee. And a guy walked up to my window and just started pounding on the driver's window, trying to break it. He broke his hand on it and blood was splattered everywhere. And he was very high. I like looked him in the eyes.
Yeah,
like,
he's got to be pretty high.
You could see nothing was there. I don't know if he saw I was there in the car or not, but I was just like, I got to get the fuck out of here. So I'm trying to move to Sonoma or Marin.
I'll come to New York.
Yeah, New York.
Spring here.
No, I will say that New York.
Y'all have your own good winemakers over here.
We have our own good winemakers out here. It's also pretty weird.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. I was thinking about how my friend 10 years ago, he had a car, and it was apparently like one of the easiest cars to break into. Like,
Honda
it was like
Civic.
It might have been a Honda Civic, yeah. And he
they had to recall some because he had like 100 different keys.
He had left his car parked like kind of in this little parking lot that was like slanted, and he like left it there overnight at like our practice space. He was in my band. And he came back the next day to get it, and they had like broken in very easily, stolen his CD player, and like accidentally kicked the parking brake. So
accidentally.
It
kind
of rolled back. And it was just in the middle of the street with a parking ticket on it. But that was it. And like cars were just driving around it. And it had been like hours it had been there. And no one had towed it or moved it. And I thought that was very indicative of like New York, where it's like, yeah, you're going to get a ticket, man. You shouldn't have left your car sideways in the middle of the street. good times. Good wines. This Cabernet has a type of berry that hasn't been invented yet in it, which is cool.
Blueberry.
It's blueberry.
So we haven't said yet. This is Samuel Bollet's 2016 Cabernet. It's like probably two or three weeks maceration, 3 years in barrel. He is one of those like very, like another mysterious guy, like doesn't see a lot of people. There's not a lot of information about him on the internet. He's in Ardèche, but he's like, he kind of likes VA. Mm-hmm. And he jokes about like he's losing his touch because like some of his wines haven't had enough VA recently.
That's but so cool.
I think he like I'm pretty sure things go into barrel and just never get topped.
Yeah.
Things just rest, and when they're stable and when he thinks they're like ready, they go out. We had like a 2016 Roussan that was basically like Van Zhong. Mm-hmm. So good. Full throttle. Like a little bit more volatile than Van Zhong tends to be, but like dense and like feral. And so these are just like
dense and feral feel like two common words today.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I know he is also like very minimal inputs in the vineyard, probably very low yields, very stressed vines. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel there's something to this not giving a fuck type of thing. Is like, I'm going to make my thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, is this a good wine? Is this
yes.
a great wine?
Yeah, it's great.
It's a fantastic wine.
I love
wine.
It. Yeah.
But, I mean, I have noticed that a lot of times what I'm interested in is wine that is for people who are kind of tired of wine. I've said this explicitly about champagne, but like this is not like, I don't like good wine. This is not like my like fucked up wine apologia, but I just like, I'm generally interested in wine where I feel like the person has drank a lot of wine and it is also the same kind of bored I am with it. And like this wine is like, oh, this is refreshing and new, rather than this is a very good example of something that I've had a bajillion.
I think that's like typicity is the worst.
I know.
Blows.
I think this is the thing I'm struggling with the most, having like been in this industry for this long, is like how much typicity is rewarded. Mm-hmm. Via
typicity is the like capitalistic machine. It's so I know. Cringe to be like capitalism, but like push it.
Yeah, I'm
like
a small bean.
It really does just like homogenize things.
Yeah, yeah.
And it makes sense. Like if compresses you want to run a business, that's what the masses want. Like Sancerre exists for a reason. But going back to the outsider art, I love the people that come into it with like no context and just do things intuitively. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the wines are bad, like Alejandro. Mm-hmm. Alejandro. Yeah.
Go off.
I think he would agree. Some of his wines are wild, but like also he makes some of the most compelling and mind-blowing things. Like, they're just like
weird fucking shit. And it's like, oh.
Okay. No one else would do what he does.
Yeah.
Like, so this is our friend Alejandro from California that has the Chateauneuf de Fargo-Sonnini label.
God is speaking through him sometimes, but sometimes God's saying some crazy shit. rethink that one, God.
So like, as the market has slowed down, and I mean, I'm sure, actually, have sales been slow in New York?
Between you and me? Yeah.
Yeah.
If you buy wine from me, buy more.
Yeah. You guys are really fucking up.
Yeah, you're fucking the game up right now.
It's just everywhere.
Yeah.
And so
I think there's a huge like reset, like a post-pandemic reset happening in the entire industry.
It's a correction.
I'm going to sell my dog.
That's cool. for parts.
Yeah, sell, I'm gonna sell her to the make
a couple Frankenstein dogs out of her.
I was about to make a bad joke.
Yeah, yeah, don't.
We're going through like kind of a correction. I think there's definitely going to be like some businesses that close, importers and producers here and in Europe. Mm-hmm. But I think what's important, I hope that the people that make wines that say something mm-hmm. stick around. And I think they will.
Right.
Like,
I think you're more likely going to see the wines that are hewing closer to the norm, but aren't excelling at that, be the ones that start to get trimmed. Because it's like, if you have the 12th best, whatever, I was going to say Sancerre, but actually any Sancerre mm-hmm. will sell still, but like the 12th best Cote de Rhone, like what the, I mean, like, I don't know. Is that good?
No,
this
is the fucking year to swing for the fences. Like, yeah. The economics are already fucked.
Yeah.
Like, have people fucking notice what you're doing.
Sure.
And, like, especially now
we're in our hyper pop era. Like, let's do some hyper pop wine.
Yeah, like, go fucking crazy beans. Like, you do not need to have your wine be under control right now, because you can get under control fucking wine. Like, go have fun, be silly, mm-hmm. be a slut, do everything you want.
After the pod, I'm gonna tell y'all what I'm gonna do.
Okay.
I've heard about this. It's very cool.
Great.
Is that the end?
No, yeah, maybe.
Dude, can we revisit?
Yeah,
I would love to.
Whites, at least. Mm-hmm. I think they both maybe have opened up.
I thought that I forget the producer's name, but the French Sauvignon Blanc. But that, even like the last, whatever, half a glass of it I had was like, it was becoming better and better as I drank it.
I'm like very thankful that Josh brings these in and that we have like, I mean, he makes, I think he releases less than 1,000 bottles a year. He like,
this is very special.
He's never happy with his wines. So they stay in barrel for a while. I imagine he probably dumps a lot of stuff.
I do love that it's just called SB1620 with like no more explanation.
That wine has developed a base note that is fucking banging.
This is like just fruits that don't exist. Mm-hmm. Like you were saying before, the berry note that hasn't been invented.
This is like a kind of kiwi, but it like can talk.
Have you ever had the golden kiwis?
Mm-hmm.
And the ones you eat with the skin. I eat all kiwis.
Those baby kiwis?
On. Yeah.
But wait.
DM's open, but.
Do y'all get it? This like canned corn, canned vegetable thing?
I get a vegetable note for sure. Okay. I don't. Canned corn, creamed corn especially freaks me out. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know what it tastes like because the concept of it is displeasing to me.
Whenever you come to my house, we'll have some.
Okay.
Big old canned corn. That sounds good.
Corn festival. I'm gonna be busy that day. What is it creamed with? I don't understand. I don't like cream.
I mean, corn syrup.
I like corn syrup. So now I'm in. Know. I'm in again.
Yeah, okay.
Corn in its own syrup. Okay, yeah, that's great. Yeah,
I'm like, let him cook.
Yeah, that's like it's corn.
It's comfy.
Corn comfy. Is what I was gonna say.
Well, I like sweet corn ice cream. So much.
Yeah, that's fucking awesome.
That's so goated.
The best. Yeah.
This would be so superlative with like August tomatoes.
Oh man,
yeah, we're almost, like some a little basil action in
we're
there.
We're almost
in
fucking produce season. I know in California that's not a thing for you, but
you guys like
it means a lot.
There's
here.
2 weeks where y'all are like rams, fiddlehead first.
Yeah, I mean we live like fucking
strawberry
peasants.
Season.
Yeah.
Strawberries, like, I get
oh
so
my god,
horny.
Like the end of August to like the last week of September. If I'm not eating a tomato with every meal, it's because I've killed myself.
I go to the farmer's market and I buy 3 cartons of strawberries, 2 to bring home and 1 to eat as I walk around. And I'm just like, my children are asking for, no, sir, these are daddy's strawberries.
These are daddy's strawberries. You pay the rent, bitch.
Get the fuck out of here. Yeah, it's hard out here. But,
we have a special meal where we have bread mm-hmm. and I get knotted like mm-hmm. Syrian cheese mm-hmm. and sliced tomato and basil. And I pour olive oil all over it. And then when Emily stops looking, I pour more olive oil over it.
Very cool.
Salt. And again, when Emily's not looking, more salt.
Sure. Do you ever crack a little fresh pep on that?
A little fresh pep. But it's mostly about the salt.
You don't want the pep to take over too much.
No. Yeah. And then it's just like, you turn the lights out when you eat this meal because it gets nasty.
You put like a blanket over your head so God can't see.
You put a blanket on. It's more putting the blanket over other people's heads so that they don't see you.
Yeah, I want to see my
work. Sack on everyone's head. You just describe how good
it's like your turn.
The first time I went to France, I was in Australia before, and it was kind of like the wettest winter in many years. It was like cold.
Wet ass Aussie.
I loved that like depressive sort of like angle it put on me. But then I flew from winter to like peak summer and I wound up in Roussillon in Cals, and it's just like
Cals is beautiful.
Figs are falling off of trees, like toasting on the ground.
Yeah.
Tomatoes everywhere. I went from like this like vitamin D depletion to exactly this. Tomatoes at every meal, drinking like sick ass Roussillon wines. Oh, and like also drink a lot of sherry. But I remember some of those tomatoes individually so vividly.
You're produce maxing. Years, that's great.
God. Years later.
I love when you're like, I have so many canker sores because my diet is white wine and tomatoes. And like, that's not changing. So mouth, you're going to have to learn.
A little sharp cheese does help.
A little sharp cheese. Yeah, like you have a scoop of Lebna after everything. Yeah. That'll take care of it.
I kind of want to, when I lived in Australia, I worked for a woman that had this like kind of hobby farm and she was a natural cheese maker. And I'd like milk her.
Like no sulfur?
Yeah, no sulfur.
Cool.
No sulfur. I it was like, yeah, kind of like training wheels off. Definitely like if things went wrong, you could die from it.
Cool.
Type of thing.
I really need you to finish the sentence because you ended on, I would milk her. And I need you to finish that sentence. What were you milking?
When she got nipples, Brent, could you milk me?
I would milk her sheep and goats when she was out of town.
That was so important for you to say.
That was so...
I had wine in my mouth and I was like combusting. I was about
what
to
the fuck, Evan?
I was like, say the rest of the sentence.
Damn,
so I'm going to tell you a concept that I don't know.
Drinking good wines. People are busting over here.
I don't think California has a horny season.
It does. In the Bay Area, because it's cold and foggy. Right, on those hot days, I'll just speak about myself. Like, I want to misbehave.
That's great.
Horny season like started officially like, a week and a half ago. Yeah. And, like,
right when I got here, I noticed it.
Everyone is acting the fuck up.
I wasn't sure if that was normal or
no.
It's like cuffing season is over, situationships are falling apart, and now people are just trying to have fun.
Yeah, they're trying to hang.
You're like, oh, it's 75 degrees, I'm gonna not wear clothes today.
Oh, yeah. It's like, oh, I better talk to this dilf with a mustache walking his dog. Yeah, don't do that, psych. Well, I'm having fun.
This is great.
We should stop spitting on this podcast.
Do you normally spit?
No. You start to a little bit more.
Okay. I notice that Kevin never does. I always empty the spit cups at the end.
I'm the only one who did today.
Yeah, okay, whatever. You got a job?
I have a family.
Yeah.
And they're all sick.
I'm trying to remember if there was any ideas that I wanted to like...
You sent us some really beautiful notes.
I didn't read those.
And no one else has ever done that. No one else takes us seriously. I think we've hit a lot of things. I'll tell you who does take it seriously.
Who? The Patreons.
That's true.
Patreon.com/discourages. Yeah. If you want to see what happens when we stop being polite and start being real.
The thing that I was most interested in talking about, we've pretty much nailed, which is just like this, the difference in California versus, in this case, France, in like the approach to these two grapes. Do you feel like when you're making Sauvignon Blanc and or Cabernet Sauvignon, have you ever made one?
Yeah. Okay. I've got one in barrel that...
Okay.
I'm not sure how long it needs to stay in barrel.
Like, yeah.
I'm like, do I bottle it this year or next? Yeah.
What year? What vintage was it?
It's 23. Not okay. That company.
That sounds cool.
Yeah.
That actually sounds really cool. Yeah.
What is different about that versus your other wines, for example? Like, do you feel more pressure on it having to represent something specific?
No, I think that was going back to saying like... leaning into California, that's one where I want it to be like a badass red wine. And like maybe I'll leave it in barrel for 3 years.
I don't know.
We'll see. It's my friend, very good friend Coral, who also makes wine. She farms this vineyard. And it's actually, so this is a good story. This is something I wanted to talk about. It's a dying, struggling vineyard. The vines are like too stressed. Uneven ripening, but like hyper low yields, very tiny clusters. It's this like, I imagine state of like the vineyards of for sure Samuel Boulay, maybe Pierre, where like the yields are not economically viable for a real business. Coral, we need more compost and more sheep in the vineyard and like got to get those yields up a little bit for your own sake. But there's something really fucking magical and special about the vines that are dying because they've been neglected for so long. The wine that I used to make, Sapphires, Samphires, and Saturn Returns, it was like a 6-acre vineyard, and we would get like less than 4 tons off of it. The vines were just like so low yields, like clusters. You could fit like multiple clusters in the palm of your hand, tiny, tiny, tiny berries, and they would ripen phenolically, like fully. I drank like the 2020 the day I got here with some friends at Color Wine Shop, and it was very good. But it's like, it doesn't pencil out. Like the Sapphires Vineyard, the owner just like didn't care that much. And she was like, yeah, if you pay to pick it, all she did was I paid to have it pruned and then picked. She didn't spray it. She didn't do anything. And the vines were just declining. And she was still probably losing money on it.
Right.
Coral is definitely losing money on this vineyard right now. And we're trying to like get it kicked into gear. But right now it's in this kind of like, I don't know the term. It's this like sad, beautiful, sad, happy sort of
melancholy.
Huzoon.
It's not melancholy. It's just like kind of special, beautiful thing.
Crazy beautiful.
Yep. Filthy gorgeous.
Okay. I don't know. Like the Sapphires, I don't make anymore. Like the vineyard, it's like
it's too gone.
It's too far gone.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to use what I learned working with that vineyard to like keep Coral's Vineyard from going that way.
Yeah.
But it just sucks that like great wines can come from this like troublesome sort of like financially unviable dynamic. Yeah,
right.
But also those wines are very, very, very hard to make.
Yeah.
Because the yields are so low. The fermentations are very slow. You like really need to keep them from going sideways because like they might go to barrel of sugar and could get volatile, could get bready. And so you really have to be on top of it.
This wine, I don't know if it's because we were talking about it, but
this wine's out of control.
It smells like a caprese salad to me. It smells like basil and tomatoes.
It's funny. The Bouget wine lightened up a little bit and became like fun and flirty. And what was this fellow's name again? This is
Carlos.
Carlos's wine just all of a sudden like developed this like kind of core of like, oh, you thought we were fucking around? Masterful work, gentlemen.
We got some serious winemakers in California. I at Wine From Here, I tasted through all of Carlos's new stuff, and it was nothing but hits. Even some of the barrel samples he brought, which I'm usually like very scared of, were in a good place.
Will you do Wine From Here next year as well?
Fuck, I don't know.
Ask
me in a month.
Okay. I've had people mention that they want to go next year. I'm like, okay, cool.
I'll do it. It's a lot of work, but also it's kind of selfishly for me to get to hang out with everyone.
Right.
Like it's honestly, it's like so dumb. It's like for the winemakers to get to hang out and talk to each other.
That's important for winemakers to have a little fun.
Yeah. Well, it is hard in California in here. Like everyone has multiple side jobs.
Yeah.
And we kind of get wrapped up in the grind, and I would like to force kind of a pause where everyone can talk about what they're working on.
I feel like the ABV festivals that I've been to here have a similar vibe, where it's like there's so much cross-pollination of people talking to each other about what they're doing. It almost feels like an East Coast kind of analog to that.
I've had some people ask for a wine from here east, and maybe I'll do
wine from there.
Well, I think it'll be some California winemakers and some East Coast winemakers. Cool. I think, honestly, like maybe 70, 60% East Coast.
Cool.
And we'll see which winemakers from California can come.
Yeah, that'd be sweet.
There's been a lot of... I've had conversations about doing a Disgorgeous Wine Festival. So if you do that, that would be great because I don't want to do one.
Yeah, I don't.
So that would,
I
can't. That would suck so bad.
Maybe you can help me. I'd be down to do
it. Yeah, Kevin and I can headline
I'll definitely be doing a lot of the work.
Yeah, Kevin will be handling most of it.
Looking back on it, I'm just like, what even was I like? What did I spend all my time on? But like,
Yuma is snoring.
Loudly. She's like, this podcast is over.
Yeah, an hour and 20 minutes. Fuck these guys. All right, fucking final thoughts. What do we got?
Sauvignon Blanc, and I think, Brian, I think you like nailed the hit on the head. Hit the nail on the head, like. I think for both of these grapes, especially Cabernet Sauvignon sort of even more so. Like, you need to let it be what it is. Actually, for both grapes. Like, you're even saying about the Sauvignon Blanc. Like, I think it is at its best when you're allowing it to be truthful to what it wants to do. And for Cabernet Sauvignon, it wants to be big and ripe and a lot. Mm-hmm. So let it be a lot.
Let it be.
And I think with Sauvignon Blanc, too, like even though a lot of, like, boring one-note Sauvignon Blancs are very, like, loudly aromatic, they're often loudly aromatic in exactly one direction. Mm-hmm. I think as a grape, when I have Sauvignon Blancs that I really like, they're loudly aromatic in multiple directions. Mm-hmm. And then also textural. And those are the two parts I think are missing from most, like, boilerplate Sauvignon Blancs. And when you do that, you have beautiful wine.
You are not going to pay your rent making the most regular-ass wine, so stop fucking trying. Mm-hmm. And just, like, you're probably not going to pay your rent making batshit wine, but maybe a cool wine podcast will notice you and they say, hey, good job.
Cool.
They paid me $10,000 to be on this podcast. Yeah,
it's $10,000 to be on Disgorgeous if you can get the invite. Mm-hmm. Patreon.com/Disgorgeous, please. My family's starving.
I guess final thoughts for me. Certainly, I think making good wine is about letting the vineyards and the grapes do their thing and embracing where you are and not looking at what anyone else is doing. And then I would tell people to drink the wines and support the winemakers around you. Farm to table kind of thing.
Your favorite winemakers probably would like you to buy their wine is like probably important to mention.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, I've had some really cool East Coast wines while I'm here. I'm very excited about what y'all have going on.
There's a lot of exciting things, bubbling up.
I said that we should be our next season, but Tira said that we have to do Portugal instead. So I guess we're in Portugal.
That sounds... There's going to be like the...
But that wasn't your other... Your other suggestion was the Rhone.
Did I say the Rhone?
Yeah.
Oh, I wanted...
Don't act like the choices were... You just want to drink
fucking Syrah.
Okay, we're going to do Portugal and Spain. My next season is going to be the Northeast, and then we're going to do the Rhone. Okay?
Yeah. Maybe I'll take over your Rhone idea and make it just be Rhone whites.
Ooh, yeah.
Can we have one Syrah every episode just to see if I'm having fun?
Maybe. We can do a Syrah check-in. Maybe.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. It's stagiairwine.com/Disgorgeous if you want to buy Disgorgeous merch.
Okay, great.
Yes. Cool.
Thanks for being here.
Of course. This is fun. Thanks for having me.
Bye.
Bye.
I can do it.